Bartonella is a bacteria. It's also known as cat scratch fever. It's transmitted by fleas from family pets, bites, scratches from dogs and cats, ticks. Its features are real similar to mycoplasma. Common symptoms are fatigue with agitation, you know, that really disturbing, uncomfortable feeling of being fatigued but irritated and agitated at the same time.
Does it affect dogs in a way?
Most like, a little bit different, but yeah, feel very, very similar. Low-grade fevers, especially in the morning and again in the afternoon. Feeling like you're continuously coming down with a cold or flu. Sweats often in the morning and late afternoon. Sometimes if you sweat at night, the sweat is described as thick and sticky. Headaches, especially frontal top of the head. Eye symptoms are common, including blurred vision, red eyes, dry eyes, depth perception problems, ringing in the ears, hearing problems, sore throats that are reoccurring, agitation, irritability, rage, impulsivity, aggression, confusion, disorientation that are transient and very scary, can be seizure-like in nature. I had a client who had a severe case of this, and it was affecting the left frontal, the temporal lobe, causing seizures, severe panic attacks. She couldn't leave. She would, she couldn't go out in public. Would check herself into a nursing home to protect herself. Poor sleep quality and falling asleep is difficult. Muscle pains. Foot pain, just often diagnosis plantar nerve irritation, burning, vibrating, tingling, numb, shooting pains, tremors, muscle twitching, heart palpitations, strange pressures and pains, episodes of breathlessness. Cordyceps will help with that air hunger too. It's the Chinese athletes would use it a lot for endurance because it really, in a short time, brings more air into your lungs, more endurance in your lungs. For air hunger, I use cordyceps over some time, but then symptomatically, ailanthus, just tree of heaven. It's one of your neighbors out here.
Yeah.
And ailanthus is a really cool plant to get to know. It's antimicrobial. So this is a tangent. Antimicrobial increases air in your lungs.
What part do you use?
The inner bark. You can use the leaves. I haven't used the leaves, but the inner bark. It's very important. It's especially for parasites in the GI tract, Giardia.
Wow.
It grows along damp waterways.
It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. A-I-L-A-N-T-H-U-S. It's a great adaptogen. It helps your body adapt to stress, emotionally, physically.
Yeah,
it is an invasive species.
I've always hated that tree.
It's a beautiful tree. It's a beautiful tree.
It stinks.
It has an interesting smell.
It has been described as the smell of semen. Yeah. Or what's another one somebody else described it? Toast that in. Okay, and Bartonella also, strange rashes that look like streaks or stretch marks, just cat scratches, those kind of rashes just appear. Often there are tender lumps and nodules along the legs and arms, spider veins. Okay. I think we're gonna do it. So the protocol for Bartonella, this is not considered to be the only effective protocol for treating Bartonella. Like different practitioners again are gonna have different protocols, but it's a good solid protocol. And if you keep in mind that Bartonella primarily is present in the endothelial lining of the blood vessels and the red blood cells, and several specific organs, the liver, the spleen, bone marrow, lymph nodes. It primarily impacts the blood or the body in the blood vessels, the heart, spleen, liver, bone, central nervous system. The core protocol for Bartonella is designed to protect the endothelial lining of the blood vessels, support the lymphatic system, which the spleen is the primary lymphatic organ. So it gets hit hard. So if anybody is missing their spleen, they're going to have a more difficult time. Supporting the immune system, protecting the heart, the lymph system, the immune system. Okay. The specific antibacterials, or the use of specific antibacterials is not essential. However, one of the herbs in the protocol, Ceta acuta, is a very potent, systemic, broadly active antibacterial. And it's real important for this disease as well because of Ceta's actions in protecting and stimulating formation of endothelial and red blood cells. And it's antibacterial. So motherwort is indicated for this because it protects the heart and endothelial cells as well. Cytokine-reducing herbs and supplements for this, cordyceps, Japanese knotweed, EGCG, pomegranate, Chinese skullcap, Chinese Seneca root, Bidens, Hutinia, olive oil, greater celandine, Schizandra. And what?
Missed about half of those.
Oh. Cordyceps, knotweed, EGCG. Do you have your list? You can just make a Bartonella note.
It's on here.
They're all on there, most of them. But if you put Bart next to them, that will save you a lot of writing. Okay. So here's a little thing you can do that has nothing to do with what I'm talking about, but it will bring your energy back up. If you stick your hands under your butt cheeks and push just under the butt bone, it'll bring your energy up a little bit. Actually, it gets energy going. Yeah, just put your hands right under. You don't even have to lift yourself up. Just push where you're sitting. Okay. Quercetin. What? Yes, I will. The herbs for reducing cytokine in Bartonella are cordyceps, knotweed, EGCG, pomegranate, Chinese skullcap, Chinese Seneca root, kudzu, I hadn't mentioned yet, K-U-D-Z-U, Bidens, Hutinia, olive oil, greater celandine, and Schizandra. Quercetin. Milk thistle should be in addition to this for protecting the liver and helping it regenerate.
Quercetin.
Yes. Quercetin, she asked if quercetin is an anti-cytokine herb or supplement. It is. So the protocol for Bartonella is to cytokine disruption, those herbs I just listed, organ protection, immune enhancement and support, and then a distant fourth is antibacterial assault. Cytokine cascades, I just did that. Organ protection is provided by Ceta for the red blood cells, hawthorn for the heart, milk thistle for the liver, and red root for the lymphatic system. The red root, the Ceanothus species. There's a lot of red roots, and there are a lot of Ceanothus, but that's, I've heard there are some plants that are called red root that actually aren't in the Ceanothus, just a local folk name. So you want the Ceanothus species. Or if you have a local one, ours is Gray Guy, Fenderlai.
Do you
And it's got that, harvest it after the frost, the roots get really red. Yeah, they'll probably work. Milk thistle. The immune support, again, consists of rhodiola and ashwagandha. If you want to add an herbal antibacterial regimen to add to it, Isatis hutinea, which they're already part of it, and Alcornia cordifolia. There are other species of Alcornia that are available, but you want the cordifolia. And Ceta is also a broad spectrum and systemic antibacterial. And L-arginine is highly important in this because of its actions on the endothelial and during Bartonella infection. It's found to reverse many of the effects of Bartonella infection because it's specifically endothelial cell protection and function. And it can interfere with Bartonella colonization in the endothelial cells. That severely disrupts the disease progression. So again, the basic protocol is knotweed, EGCG, quercetin, L-arginine, cordyceps, ceta, red root, milk thistle, hawthorn, rhodiola, ashwagandha, isatis, hutinea, alcornia, pomegranate juice. Okay, all that. Okay, any questions? It's not as important as the mycoplasma, but it is a scavenger. It does scavenge nutrients, so if you did a mycoplasma diet, you'd be in really good shape. Anti-inflammatory, high, good fats, good proteins, meat proteins.
Could you talk about the number of herbs taken together expressed on its about anything flipped? How many herbs?
There's a lot. You just take a lot of herbs, a lot of medications. There's really not a lot of contraindications or side effects. Some of them are food herbs. Cordyceps is one of those. So the herbs are going to fall into either medicinal herbs or food herbs, which act as medicine. There's only very few, like the cat's claw, knotweed, that are contraindicated in pregnancy. The motherwort and blood pressure lowering. I think I covered most of them. But if you have any concerns about it, the internet's a great resource for doing researches on herb-drug interactions. Michael Moore, the Southwest herbalist, in the back of his books, he has a lot of listings of those. There's a couple of comprehensive books on those out, but primarily, and then, when the book comes out, it's got all of that stuff in it. The healing lime has all of the contraindications and interactions. There's not a lot. Sometimes there is, but generally with these, not. Primarily what shows up consistently is that at the top of the list is cautions is that they potentiate other herbs or pharmaceuticals. Oh, I do want to say something about red root. I haven't said much about that. But red root is my favorite lymphatic herb. Cleavers is good if you can get a good fresh cleavers tincture or juicing cleavers. It's a little gentler. Poke is the strongest lymphatic herb, and you only use, because it's so strong, like 5 drops of poke. Right, poke root. 3 to 5 drops twice a day. Red root, I typically have people using it a quarter teaspoon 3 times a day. Sometimes, on rare occasion, I've had them increase it if they're having Herxheimer or lymph node swelling. It reduces inflammation in the spleen and the liver pretty strongly. You know, I haven't had anybody use castor oil packs over the spleen, but it certainly would be indicated. Typically, I have them focus on castor oil packs over the liver and the GI tract, or if there's swelling. It's a really good, if you don't know castor oil packs, you might want to be familiar with them because it can help reduce symptoms. It certainly helps the liver dump toxins. Okay, Babesia. Okay, you guys are great hanging in there. It's a lot of stuff. Babesia are protozoa blood parasites closely related to malaria, the malaria parasite. Symptoms are similar as with malaria. Babesia parasites reproduce in the red blood cells. So, hours and hours ago, I mentioned if you have an infection of Mycoplasma, Lyme, and Babesia and Mycoplasma are really going to hit the red blood cells doubly hard. There are more than 110 species of Babesia. They infect animals across the spectrum, birds, fish, reptiles, mammals. Babesia parasites are very common in animals. At least 10 species infect people. Studies are finding that newer species of Babesia are being identified that are, in fact, jumping from animals like cows, cattle, deer, elk, and so on. They're jumping from wild animals into domestic animals more frequently and then into animals. And they also alter their genomic structure to survive in this species, this host. There's currently strong movement to reclassify Babesia. You don't need to know that this. Transmission is primarily by tick, with various ticks carrying different species of Babesia. Transfusion or placental transfers. The main endemic areas for infection are the Northeast, New Jersey and upward, Northern California through Washington State, geographical area around Wisconsin, southwest Georgia as the epicenter. And generally, Babesia, if you think Lyme endemic areas, you've got Babesia endemic areas. Infection may be asymptomatic often for years unless the immune system function fails or drops. Mild symptoms are generally flu-like, malaise, discomfort, feeling out of sorts, tiredness, continual low-grade fevers, night sweats, headache, nausea, abdominal pain, diarrhea. Babesia is famous for relapsing symptoms. You get better and you relapse. You get better, you relapse. In general, it presents as a fever of unknown origin, accompanied by headache, tiredness, malaise, and joint pain. As infection continues, fever increases, can go up to 105, shaking, chills, enlargement of the liver and spleen, mild neutropenia, anemia. Usually, the lymph nodes are not enlarged with Babesia. If the disease becomes severe, acute respiratory distress syndrome, disseminated intravascular coagulation, organ failure, renal, heart, liver, splenic rupture, septic shock, coma, and death can occur. People without a spleen are at extreme risk for serious infection and death. The elderly, over 50, the immunocompromised are at risk for more serious complications. Spleen protection and enhancement herbs are essential. Again, red root, poke root, calendula, baptisia, cleavers. Along with symptoms, a blood smear examination and PCR in combination is the usual diagnostic approach. For spleen enhancement and protection, red root, poke root, calendula, baptisia, and cleavers. Does anybody else have any other herbs they use for spleen lymphatic?
Pokeberry.
Pokeberry? Oh, milder than the root. Pokeberry, she said, is milder than the poke root. So diagnosis, along with the symptoms, a blood smear and PCR. Normal pharmaceutical treatment for babesia is atovaquine, A-T-O-V-A-Q-U.
Mepron.
Oh, Mepron, right. That says that right there. Cindamycin plus quinine. Even after pharmaceutical treatment, relapsing babesia is common, especially in the immunocompromised or those without spleens. And babesia resistance to pharmaceuticals is an increasing problem. And of course, they have their own cytokine profile. So the treatment, the rationale is to protect the red blood cells. Acetate acuta is indicated there. Antimicrobials are Ceta, Cryptolepis, Alcornia, Bidens, Artemisia. Red root for spleen protection. Milk thistle for liver protection. Chinese skullcap, Houtania, licorice, cordyceps, and elder for immune enhancement. Treat septic shock if necessary with Salvia militariza and Angelica sinensis. It is Donghui. Militariza, which Halo has in their possession. Common name for Salvia? Red sage, right. Babesia. Septic shock. Japanese knotweed. Japanese knotweed is showing up for a number of cytokine inhibitors. So the protocol is a combination tincture formula of Ceta, Bidens, Cryptolepis, and Brucea javanica fruit. Equal parts Brucea javanica. A quarter to a half a teaspoon three times a day. Red root, quarter teaspoon three times a day. The immune formulation tincture combination of Chinese skullcap, cordyceps, licorice, quarter teaspoon three times a day, equal parts of those. Cytokine inhibition tincture, kudzu, Japanese knotweed, Houtania. Quarter teaspoon three times a day. And proteolytic enzymes that will repair, reduce inflammation, protect the lungs during lung infections, protects the liver. And the Salvia militariza Angelica sinensis tincture combination, have that on hand if it's necessary in extreme illness from cytokine elevation or septic shock. Up to a tablespoon each half hour as necessary. Yes. To have on hand a combination of Salvia militariza and Angelica and tincture combination for extreme illness from the cytokine elevation or septic shock. In that case, you use up to a tablespoon every half hour to bring them out of it. Okay, so that's the babesia bit. Lykia. Okay, thanks for hanging in there, you guys. Doing great. And you can stick your hands under your butt again if you need to. Okay, Ehrlichia. The primary Ehrlichias, and I grouped Ehrlichia and Anaplasma in here just to keep things complicated. The infect people are very similar bacteria. In fact, Anaplasma was once considered to be an Ehrlichia. Ehrlichia causes what is called human monocytic Ehrlichiosis. Both Ehrlichia and Anaplasma are small gram-negative bacteria, but they've lost the capacity to live in the wild on their own. They are parasitic bacteria, primarily in mammals and their tick host. Both organisms cause a Non-specific febrile illness with accompanying leukopenia, mild liver injury, and accompanying spleen inflammation. Both bacteria, as do most co-infections with Lyme, stimulate specific forms of cellular inflammation in the body. Both increase the likelihood of opportunistic infections due to the impact on the immune function. Ehrlichia is most severely inflammatory, more severely inflammatory than anaplasma, and significant tissue inflammation and cerebrospinal fluid pleocytosis, which may include infected cells, is common. Their cell walls are high in cholesterol, which they derive from the host cells. They use their cholesterol-rich cell walls to facilitate entry into host cells. High cholesterol diets facilitates anaplasma infection in people, especially in the spleen, liver, and blood. At least 7 different tick types can spread Ehrlichia. The bacteria are not transmitted ovarially by ticks. The major tick species that spreads Ehrlichia is mostly in the southeast and south central U.S. states, with the highest incidence of Ehrlichia in Michigan, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Maryland. Connecticut, Wisconsin, and New York have the most cases of anaplasma.
There's a lot of horses in Ehrlichia in California.
Are they?
Yeah, if that's also one that can infect humans.
That's an interesting question. Wondering if the Ehrlichia that's infecting horses in California would jump to humans. Peak incidence of infections of both of these bacteria are June and July. And it shows up worldwide, China, Russia, Korea. Can't escape it. Ehrlichia and anaplasma exist intracellularly, inside the cell as well, in 2 distinct forms, dense cord cells and reticulate cells. Regular relapsing is common with these bacteria as they alter their protein coats regularly to avoid immune attack. Those over 50 are at the most risk due to decreased immune health. 17% develop life-threatening complications. The worse the immune health, the more severe the disease course. The more depleted the immune system, the more likely the disease will produce septic shock. The main difference between the 2 types of bacteria is that Ehrlichia-infected people appear to have more neurological problems. Otherwise, the symptoms are very similar. This is primarily because the monocytes can cross the blood-brain barrier much more easily, about 6 times as easily. The use of sulfa antibiotics has been linked to severe manifestations of Ehrlichia infection. So use of them is contraindicated. The symptoms, fever is universal, followed by headaches, myalgias, skin eruption is common in children, rash, GI symptoms, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, anorexia, sometimes acute abdominal pain mimicking appendicitis can occur. Altered mental states can happen. Neurological features, meningitis, cranial nerve palsy, seizures, coma. Long-term neurological squalae are uncommon, but cognitive delays, fine motor impairment, and persistent foot drop can all occur. Many adults report subjective neurocognitive deficits. Cranial nerve palsy. Cranial nerve palsy usually shows up is reported after antimicrobial therapy is initiated. Ehrlichia scavenges iron heavily. If you don't stop the cytokine storms, it can lead to massive organ failure. Coagulation, necrosis, prophylactic liver protection is essential. It's important to check for liver enzymes. There's tremendous overpopulation of pro-inflammatory cytokines. As CD4 cell counts fall considerably, present symptoms as fever, headache, myalgia, anorexia, leukopenia, anemia. Hyperplasia of the spleen and liver, lymph node, bone marrow, cardiac failure, aseptic meningitis, adult respiratory distress syndrome are some of the more serious complications from Ehrlichia infection. There's a plant near me in southwest New Mexico that grows. It's Pagean harmala, Syrian rue, is indicated for Ehrlichia, or wild rue, African rue. It's an invasive in the U.S., especially in the West. Probably here, even New Mexico, California.
What's the Latin name?
P-E-G-A-N-U-M, harmala. Its properties are it's analgesic, anthelmintic, abortifacient, anti-malarial. Harmine, the alkaloid, is a constituent specific for killing intracellular parasites. Curcumin, salvia militarizer root, which is specific for sepsis and septic shock, which Ehrlichia can cause. Houtania, the primary herbs are Houtania, salvia, protecting the spleen and liver. And Bidens, normalizes white blood cells, prevents infection of white blood cells, and stimulates apoptosis of infected cells. Bidens and Houtania, to a lesser extent, are highly protective of white blood cells. Bidens especially active for CD4 and T cells, lymphocytes, granulites. Bidens reduces neutrophil infiltration in the tissues, where spleen and liver damage is common. So milk thistle, red root. Okay. More Ehrlichia herbs are Bidens, Reishi, Echinacea angustifolia, Ashwagandha, milk thistle, red root, Chinese senega root, Chinese skullcap, elder, boneset, cordyceps, Japanese knotweed. So you can see in these protocols, you start integrating them into your life, they're going to start overlapping in the infections and you'll be covered pretty well. That and getting your immune system up. And again, it's another infection that is not routinely scanned for in blood banks and transfusions. If you're interested in pharmaceuticals for that, it's tetracyclines, doxycycline. Though Ehrlichia is resistant to most antibiotics, penicillins and sulfa drugs and fluoroquinolones, Tocipro. I want to talk a little bit about... No, I don't. Okay, any questions? Okay. Javanica was the second word of Busia. Chinese senega root. She wanted to go over the herbs for Babesia. Okay. Was there another one? Candida. What would you like to talk about, Candida?
Recommendations on how to grow hair. It's in the next 2 years for heavy metals, along with Candida that has been resolved over time.
Yeah. Right. So she's asking about addressing heavy metals and candida. There's a number of ways you can go at it. Systemically, undecenic acid. Thorne Research has a product. It's called SF744.
What is the name of the company?
Thorne Research. SF744. It's undecenic acid. It's pretty intense. You take like 4 or 5 capsules 3 or 4 times a day for 4 or 5 days. Can cause some stomach upset.
Okay.
4 or 5 days. Caprylic acid is another approach. Herbally, I use a combination, pretty effectively, I use a combination of desert willow, chaparral, and I've used those two alone, but, and Stephen adds a third one, another southwest plant, Chaparral amargosa. I use them in equal parts in a formulation and stay pretty focused on it for about 12 days. It's pretty effective. Some people can get a little sensitive to chaparral, and you'll know if you're sensitive if you start having lymph node swelling, but primarily you can take it for a while before that starts to show up. But just be aware that if you're taking chaparral and you start to get lymph swelling, then to stop the chaparral, and the lymph will resolve pretty quickly.
What if you have leaky gut?
Yeah, she's asking about leaky gut. Does anybody have a remedy for leaky gut?
Gelatin, fermented foods.
Gelatin? Yeah, fermented foods. Yeah, marshmallow. You know, some of the supportive treatments. You know, I talked about castor oil packs. To have in your first aid kit, Epsom salt baths, pull toxins out. So when you're treating these infections, it's important to be also aware of keeping your detox pathways open. N-acetylcysteine's a glutathione precursor, right? Which is important for liver detox. Sweat, sauna, prayer, spiritual practice. Dry skin brushing, did anybody know that one? Dry skin brushing, so you're brushing from the bottom up toward your heart and from the top down toward your heart. And, you know, all the lymph. The lymph are real close to the surface of the body, so it doesn't take a lot of pressure. Swedish massage, lymphatic massage.
And low-carb.
Low-carb, high proteins.
Like,
and make sure your bowels are moving. You know, every day, a couple times a day even. Chlorella is a good one for that. It's as it's pulling metals out, if you take higher doses of chlorella, it can increase peristalsis. D3 is important for colon health. It's also anti-inflammatory.
And does chlorella, does it bind to it or does it just pull it out?
It binds and pulls it and crosses the blood-brain barrier, pulls it out of your brain. You could, if you want to be more focused on heavy metals, cilantro tincture.
Oh, right.
What?
Cilantro. And also the extract from kelp, it started with an A, polyamalgamase, was a specific thing to extract heavy metals from poison.
Kelp?
Sodium alginate.
Sodium alginate from kelp for pulling heavy metals.
But,
Seaweeds, increasing seaweeds in your diet, dulse, kelp if it's palatable. I think it tastes like the bottom of a fish tank, but nori, some of them are really delicious to have as a snack. Yep.
What about blue-green algae, come off or not Shasta blue-green algae?
Yeah, blue-green algaes, spirulina, all of those. They're highly, highly nutritious. Packed with nutrition, good source of RNA, DNA.
So, and you would say that treatment of 4 or 5 days
and then being on a low carbohydrate diet and fortifying yourself should get rid of candida?
Yes. Probiotics.
Boulardia, Saccharomyces, to replace.
Saccharomyces is the best, yeah.
To replace the natural.
Yeah.
Teasel root, I've read two different protocols from Skoll and Peter, and I was just curious if you happen to have which one is better, or one of them says 3 drops 3 times a day once a month, the other one says 3 tablespoons 3 times a day for 3 months. I'm just curious.
Could you repeat the question?
She's asking about teasel root. There are different philosophies on teasel root. One's Wolf Storl, which actually comes from Matthew Wood, uses homeopathic doses of teasel, 3 drops 3 times a day, versus higher doses, more eclectic doses of, teaspoons for a longer time. It's not part of my core protocol, but there are times when it's been very specific, and people, I think if they have a relationship with teasel, it seems to be much more impactful. There are cases where people have healed Lyme just with teasel over a long time, 6 months. It changes the terrain, makes it anti-spirochete hospitable, reduces inflammation. It's a very cool plant. Grows around here. It's the root you use. If somebody's got, severe edema in the knee, severe arthritis, that's also, I don't know if it's Chinese, but when I see knee stuff going on, probably because I have it, my kidneys, so I go knees, kidneys. Teasel also supports the kidneys, and it works on that meridian. I think it's worth, definitely a serious plant to consider, especially in those symptoms, arthritis. Have you used it?
Yeah, I've been using it at home, just in the 3 drops, 3 times a day, if it is, just, the last couple months, but I'm just curious if I'm using enough of it and if I should increase.
After a few months, you certainly can increase it, to see if you get better results.
Have you guys focused on Picoriza? It's a brilliantly yellow, bitter root that's very protective to liver and very anti-parasitic. I've been throwing it in. I really like it.
I haven't. Picoriza, he said.
It's in the Hep C book. Yeah, he mentions it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that one, right. Picoriza for liver.
And parasites.
And parasites.
Liver parasites and others. Where's it from?
Yeah. I'm not sure I can read this. Are the Lyme spirochetes and mycoplasma, does anybody know who wrote this? Bacteria retested? Do we talk about co-infections because the bacteria C of the same family? It's not ringing a bell.
Oh, I think I asked if the Lyme spirochetes were of the same family as the mycoplasma and the zoonotic infections that we're talking about? Or why do we talk about them together? Is it because they're related or just because they happen to interact in such a way that
Yeah, okay, she's asking if the spirochetes and mycoplasma and co-infection bacteria are related. And is that why we're talking about them as co-infections? They're not, but they are opportunistic, parasitic. So if there's a weakness in the immune system or somewhere in the body, I think I alluded to earlier that mycoplasma, many of us carry mycoplasma and these infections, and are symptom-free for a long time until there's a trauma or a drop in the immune system. So the Lyme is a specific bacteria. It's a spirochete bacteria. In fact, its structure is like corkscrew. It's related to syphilis bacteria. First, when it first came out, it was called Deer Syphilis. So that's why a lot of the symptoms look syphilitic, you know, in nature. Mycoplasma is a completely different bacteria. So they're all different bacteria, and Babesia is actually a parasite. It's a malaria bacteria. So they are separate bacteria, but
they're friends.
They share, you know, they share information. Okay. You went over the core protocol for mycoplasma very quickly. Is there any way you could write it on the list and email it to us or give it to Halo for distribution, please?
Yeah.
I think I could do that. And it might even be on the Buhner Healing Lyme website. A lot of the protocols are listed there. If anybody checks or if I check, then I can send you the link. But I would check there first because a lot of this, the protocols are listed there. Usually on a side menu, it's real easy to see and clear. Okay, I want to give you something to take. Well, I've given you a lot to take home, but an exercise, actually, that it's a very healing exercise. It's a very potent. It can potentiate. It can alter the cascade of stress hormones immediately, without even taking anything. It alters blood pressure, heart rate. Calms the nervous system, gets you grounded, so which means you're home in your body where healing happens and not out here in the ethers. Okay. And it has a lot of applications, but I just want to give you this as an introductory exercise. And if you practice this daily, you can even move through the world from this place. And this is a heart field exercise. There's been a lot of research on the heart field, especially, you know, the Heart Math Institute. Stephen wrote about it in Secret Teachings of Plants. The heart is an organ of perception. There's a sex book back there that talks about it and applications for it. But it's tremendously healing and calming. And there's so much love and compassion that was here today. And my gift to send this home with you. And then you can just practice it when you're stressed, when you're anxious, when times are difficult. You do this exercise. Like I said, it changes the whole hormonal cascade, blood pressure, heart rate, rhythm. And then practicing moving through the world like this, just from this place. And I'll give you just a quick demonstration of the heart field is this invisible energy that radiates out from our body. It's from our heart is a generator, electromagnetic frequency generator. Our heart is one of them, and our gut is one of them. Our enteric brain is one of them. The heart is the strongest one. It's the strongest electromagnetic frequency generator that in our body. It's measurable with the instruments we have, I think now up to 20 feet from the body, 360 degrees. We have a human habit of thinking heart field is unidirectional. It's actually 360 degrees. It's that field is the exact same shape as the electromagnetic field of the Earth. It's the exact same shape. What else can I tell you about it? It's the way that we understand meanings, and we get. Ever had this experience where you feel somebody staring at you in the back of your head? It's because that's touched your heart field and it got your attention. Oh, what's going on there? And it's also, it's very, very sensitive. Some of us, if we work at this, you can get to very sophisticated levels of sensitivity with this. What else do I want to say about it? So it's measurable with instruments up there. Most people, it's around 18 inches. This is what, you know, if you're in a crowd and or at a party and somebody comes up and they're standing right there and you say, you know, they're in your space, you feel real uncomfortable and you back up just a bit, back into your comfort zone so that they're out of your space. So I'll give you a demonstration, and then I'll show you. I'll tell you how to do this, to work with it. Let's see. Move this out of the way. Okay. I need someone. Shay, will you do it with me? Okay. So I want you to. So you can just stand back here. Mm-hmm. Stand right there. Okay. And face me. And she's already got her heart field. She's got a massive heart field. So she's like, cry when I'm in her presence all the time because it's so big. So you can just try it in your seat, you know. We armor ourselves. Wilhelm Reich said we body armoring, he coined that phrase, we armor up and protect ourselves. So a lot of the times we do it like this, we roll our shoulders. So open up your heart field by just opening up. Shoulders, open up that space. I've seen people do this and a flood of emotions that they've been holding so tight and so close just unraveled. And I'm going to walk towards you. So we've got these invisible energy fields right here. And at some point, they'll touch. I don't know if you're a good candidate. You're too big.
I can already feel you.
Yeah, I know you can. It's like, this is not going to work. All right. We'll
you
do it.
You might want somebody, I don't know.
We might,
yeah,
but.
Okay.
Okay. You can look at me or you can keep your eyes closed. So at some point, it's going to get even stronger.
Yeah, it's coming all the way up through me. Yeah.
See, she, even her smile is getting bigger. The childlike part of us inside feels that touch before we do consciously. And that part will always give it away. That. But you have a massive heart field. Thanks. I'm going to get somebody else. I just wanted to play with you for a minute anyway. Let's see. Will you do it? Yeah, same thing. You can just stay there and I'll walk toward you and just watch her. Okay. See that? Did you feel?
Yeah.
See? She gave it away. She can't help it. And everybody will do it at a different, because our heart fields are all different sizes and shapes. Well, they're all the same shape, but different sizes, different sensitivities. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, so what you can do is you just bring your awareness into your heart, almost like you're breathing through your heart. Just drop your awareness down there. As soon as you do that, your entire hormonal cascade shifts. Heart rate, blood pressure, the feeling in the room even changed. Feel it? This is an immediate thing. Put this in your medicine basket, in your internal medicine basket. And there's a lot of information. You can use this in so many different ways. You wrap your heart field around your loved ones, around your children. I used to practice this with my dog when he's sleeping on the porch, and I just consciously send my heart field out, just getting a sense of the movement of it. And he'd be sleeping, and pretty soon my heart field would touch, and he'd wake up and go, "What the heck?" And after a while, he got bored, and he goes, "Oh, it's you doing that thing again." let's see. Doing this with your medicines. As you're making medicines, use your heart field and praying with it, potentiates it. That's medicine. That's what separates medicine from tinctures. Keep the sacredness and the vitality and honoring the medicines, the plants, makes them stronger. Brings you into relationship with them. Okay, thank you all so very, very much. You've been brave, patient. Thank you. Thanks,
Thank
Shay.
You.
Thanks, Halo. Thank Rachel, Anna, Sean, all of you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.